Yes!
It's the Fan Morning Show. We are fired up. We're all in our masks, drumming away. Blake Murphy,
I hate this one.
A terrified Ailish Forfar.
I hate this one.
The Toronto Blue Jays going out and not only spending big money on a relief pitcher, but also, I still maintain, updated the LED boards in Rogers Center just for his sprint out of the bullpen. JD, I know you got that one.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that this season, his season was one of the, well, I don't care how we felt about him on the way out. The way in, it was one of the most badass seasons by any Blue Jay in my lifetime. I'm telling you. Like, that was incredible. I love that ride. Who didn't love that year?
That was BJ Ryan. That was his 2006 season. A 1.37 ERA with 38 saves. Makes the All-Star team. Comes sprinting out of the bullpen with those cheesy fake flames all around the Rogers Center. It's a duality by Slipknot. And then by the time he hits the infield, he's just walking slowly and soaked in sweat. But
we could do a podcast on, like, we could actually do like a full hour on the BJ Ryan experience. But all I would say to this is too, is like, there was something also about having a closer that was pitching that well, who came out to that song, and who was the big money free agent that was like giving you the, like, the value on the dollar. The Blue Jays were exciting, but also that he looked like he could kick somebody's ass, and he was coming out to, like, actually have a fight. Like, it was almost like a UFC fighter.
It's the
closest to a movie
closer that there's been in Toronto. Like, I know Billy Koch had the big biker goatee and stuff, but he was also good for like 8 seconds. All right. We're going to bring in Arden Zwelling now, MLB writer, Sportsnet, co-host of the At the Letters podcast. And this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Arden, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, what's going on? I'm actually having Jason Grilley flashbacks right now. That's what I that's what that brought to mind for me, thinking about guys running in and flames on the scoreboard and going nuts on the mound. That's where I went there.
Yeah, Jason Grilley was another one where I believe we even gave away aprons at one point and stuff like that.
I have one of those.
Yeah, I think we gave even Rogers Grill had a, they were like the Grilley, like there was something.
Yeah, the Grilley aprons. I have one.
Yeah, because he used to come out to Before I Forget by Slipknot, and then he used Whipping by Pearl Jam, I think, when he was here. Yeah, Grilley was another good one. Arden, how fired up for tomorrow are you, man?
Can you just name two Jason Grilley walk-up songs off the top of your head? That's insane. That is crazy.
I did a lot of prep for this episode, man.
Blake is revealing some things about himself today. It would make me very concerned to enter a confined room with him every day.
So, look, man, you don't want to see me in an alley wearing my Slipknot mask. That's for sure. But no, I was prepping for this, and I had 17 or 18 songs, and we only have 8 slots, and one of them is on Ailish's list tomorrow, so I cut that one. Anyway, so I have a lot of Jay's walk-up stuff prepped is all.
Fair enough. I'm fired up, man. I am excited, dude. How could you not be, right? First real home opener since 2019. First sold out. Like, we don't know that it's going to be a sellout yet, but it's going to be a sellout.
First sold out
home opener since 2018. The 2019 home opener did not sell out. There was still 40,000+, but it wasn't a true sellout. So just having that thing packed to the rafters for the first time in, 48 months is kind of insane. You think about 4 years ago, you think about 2018. I mean, this team was I bet you Devin Travis led off that day, and like Troy Tulowitzki might have been in the lineup. Like, it was a completely different team. So it is really, really exciting. But just thinking about the energy and what it's going to be like at Rogers Center on Friday.
Yeah, Devin Travis coming out to No Problems by Chance the Rapper would have been the one he's leading off to. I know. Sorry, Arden. I mentioned the kind of funny, cheesy at that time LED lights for BJ Ryan's entrance. So we got a lot of actual baseball stuff to ask you. But when we all get to Rogers Center on Friday, it's going to look pretty different. And you had a piece up at sportsnet.ca, just a boatload of great spring training content, but you got the tour, you got all the details. It's what to expect from the Blue Jays new scoreboard, lights, and turf. I don't want to make you go through all those details, but from within that story and all the Rogers Center upgrades that we'll see tomorrow, what is the thing you're most excited about or you think is the coolest from reporting out that story?
honestly, and this is so lame, for me it was learning about the different blends of clay
that the Blue Jays use
around the infield dirt. It's not, calling it infield dirt is a misnomer. It's infield clay. They're clay blends that they use. And the Blue Jays use five different blends of clay around the infield. I never knew that until I started reporting this thing. I just assumed it was just all dirt. But the Blue Jays have done like studies and tests on these clay mixes and blends that they use. So like it all looks uniform when you look out at the field. But there are areas that need to be sort of softer and need to sort of absorb more water, like between the bases. So that'll have maybe a bit more sand in it than clay. And then there's places that need to be more durable, like where the pitcher lands on the mound or the batter's boxes or the catcher's area behind the plate, which get beat up. So that'll have a firmer blend of clay. I can hear the sighs and the eye rolls right now, but honestly,
well, I'm just picturing them. You know the banners they put on the side of the building of the players to come down and watch. It's like clay.
It's dirt.
Yeah,
come
clay.
See our clay. Come, yeah.
What part of the clay needs more water? We'll find out today at
the
Rogers Center.
You can get little vials of clay at the Jays shop. You know, take home some clay.
Sure, I also like the idea that one of the components that they needed to evaluate was like how cool it looks on the jersey after you slide into a base or making a diving catch.
Yeah.
So they've got like Arden out there helping test just sliding into bases and like, no, this looks too muddy on the jersey. We need something that brushes off a little cooler when you stand up at second base. A lot goes into it.
The level of granular detail, honestly, that went into that was super cool to hear about. But I'll give fans some like actual stuff. You know, the scoreboard is brand new, and like so, I know every off season we kind of hear about improvements at Rogers Center. We widen the concourses, we put new paint, whatever, and then people show up and are like, it kind of looks like the same old dome to me. I actually think the Rogers Center will look and feel different this year, and I actually think people will notice it. The scoreboard is like monstrous. It is larger than the Jumbotron was. The Blue Jays replaced the oldest scoreboard in the league. I think it was put in or updated in 2005 or something, and all the guts of it and then all the infrastructure behind it was all from like opening day 89, all replaced. The scoreboard is taller now because they ripped out the restaurant that was beneath it, so it's definitely larger, and now it extends out with these ribbons on either side, and it's just like fans are going to notice it for sure. And then the other thing fans are really going to notice is the lights, and it's not just that the lights are better and now are more efficient and they're LED and the light is just truer and more of a daylight on the field, but the Blue Jays actually are the first MLB club, first MLB ballpark to have those sort of color change lights. The Marlins are going to have them as well this year, but Blue Jays ended up getting them in first, and that just like opens up the possibilities of what you can do in terms of like different settings and themes. So on Canada Day, the place is going to be red and white, and during Pride Week, there's going to be rainbow effects. And I mean, after a Blue Jay hits a home run, you're going to notice like a serious celebration display from a light show perspective. So like fans are going to notice this stuff. It's going to be a very different feel in the ballpark this year. I think it's going to be really cool to see.
So I'm excited for that, and I always love ballpark improvements. I will say this though, as a guy who's, you know, not in the media boxes like you guys, who goes as a fan to all these games, until they figure out areas for people to congregate and drink where like you can meet your friend for a beer, it's a huge problem. And two is like when you do meet your friend for a beer, it's always in the concourse, and the concourse is like dark and dreary, and it's just always a weird thing. They got to figure out those two things. So are you saying like the lights are also going to improve the concourse? Because I've always hated that about the Rogers Center. It's like you walk in there, it's like gloomy when you're walking around the concourse.
Yeah, no, the lights in the stands have been updated as well, because it's kind of like interesting. The old lights, which are HID fixtures, so like really old school stuff, they just kind of sprayed light all over the place. They weren't very directional. So they actually sent a lot of light into the stands. When the Blue Jays updated to the new LED ones, which are like engineered and fine-tuned for very specific points on the field, they lost some of that spillover into the stands and the concourses. So the Blue Jays ended up updating the lighting around fan areas as well, because, JD, they got even darker than they had been with the update to the LEDs. So you're going to notice a lot more light, I think, around the fan areas. And there's these cool new sort of, they're called ball trackers, and they're around the 200 level. There's 16 of them, and they're actually shooting light up into the air 400 feet. So those are going to light up the actual roof itself when it's closed, and even when it's open, 400 feet into the night sky. So the entire atmosphere is going to feel a lot more lit. Like, you're not going to have that sort of dingy dankness from the roof anymore. Like, it's going to be lit up a lot more than it has been. It's just going to feel a lot clearer and warmer. So I think the fans will definitely notice that, and also outfielders as well are just going to have an easier time tracking huge towering fly balls, because there are these 16 apparatuses around the 200 level shooting light up into the sky.
So, all right, let's talk.
Did everybody fall asleep? Is that what just happened?
No.
I think that's
I'm
what
Googling
happened.
Clay. Sure. I'm looking at light fixtures.
Everybody's on clay. So
mute malfunction. Sorry, buddy.
We gotta talk to you now about Pearson, because the mono thing, like, you're kind of the Pearson guy. You're sort of the Pearson whisperer a little bit. Like, you've been on him from the beginning. You've gone down. You visited him early. Like, you've been down at his performance center, all the different stuff. You've been writing about Pearson since he was on the team. This setback, the fallout of it, I wonder two things. One is just, like, what do you think it's going to actually do to him? Because he's just been working so hard to try to get to crack a major league roster. And then what do you view about, like, the actual impact it's going to have on this big league club immediately?
Well, if there's a silver lining, it's that he is accustomed to overcoming adversity such as this, and sort of it's not your fault injuries, right? Because this wasn't like an overuse thing or a trying to push himself too hard thing. Like, the guy caught mono, and it's going to come down obviously to just how severe his case is, how long it takes him to recover from it. I'm not expecting to see him on a big league mound until the month of May at the earliest, honestly. He's just going to be set back in his progression and his buildup to such a degree that he's going to, I don't know if he'll have to start spring training over again, but he is going to have to redo a number of steps that he had already completed in his buildup for the season. So, like, I'm sure that is dispiriting and demoralizing. Nobody wanted to be on a big league mound proving themselves more than Nate Pearson this year, for all the reasons that we have talked about in the past. I mean, in an interesting way, like, from the club's perspective, you know, they were going to be cautious with his usage this year and his workload. Like, obviously, he wasn't going to be a 200-inning starter. I think they were looking more at, like, a Louis Patino model or Shane McClanahan model, right? Like, getting them up to 100, 120, 125 innings, you know, some longer outings, maybe a spot start here and there, some bulk out of the bullpen, maybe some shorter outings out of the bullpen as well when the time called for it, and giving him, you know, obviously enough rest and recovery time between starts between outings, just so that he can build up that durability, that workload, and continue to layer in an innings base that the club hopes he's going to build off of going forward. Because the goal is still for him to be a starter, because it's all the building blocks are there for a really effective frontline MLB starter. But, I mean, the Blue Jays in win-now mode, it's tough to sort of develop and win at the same time. So those two things can sometimes be in conflict with each other. And Nate Pearson as well is going to turn 26 this year. It's just getting up, you know, into his career, and at some point just has to become something of a ball player at the MLB level in whatever role that's going to be. So, you know, I do think there's still an avenue for him to get to that, like, 120 inning mark by the end of the year. But, like, it's really going to depend on how long this thing keeps him out for, because mono could be a relatively short thing. It could be a really long thing as well. So we just don't know enough about how long this is going to hold him out to really kind of assess what his season's going to look like. But I mean, it's another setback, and it's tough for him and tough for the Blue Jays.
Arden, I get it. I get the Jays' perspective. I get what you're saying, that, hey, it, like, developmentally, until a guy can absolutely show he can't be a starter, you should try him as a starter. Like, you don't want to convert a guy to the bullpen because a starter's so much more valuable. But like you said, they are in a win now mode, and this is, like, Pearson hasn't thrown 100 innings in, like, forever. So I don't even know that, like you said, he's going to be 26. Next year will be ostensibly his last option year. So they're running out of runway here, even for him as a developmental piece, even with all the injury time. At what point I don't want to say give up, but do you just look at, hey, bullpen is the path to this guy contributing while our window's open? Like, again, I get it. I get why a starter's way more valuable, but do they have, like, is their patience running out with that? And I don't mean patience like with Pearson as a guy, but in terms of you need something out of this first round pick during this window. And if that ends up having to be a reliever, well, so be it. You gave it 5 or 6 years in the minors.
Yeah, I mean, some of that will sort of answer itself later this year, depending on where the Blue Jays are at in the standings, where their bullpen's at, how badly they need him out of, like, last season, right, in September, the Blue Jays badly needed Nate Pearson out of the bullpen in one inning, like, shove it down your throat stints, because they, like, were, you know, the bullpen was an issue all of last year, and the Blue Jays didn't have that high velo, swing and miss, like, get big strikeouts and big spots guy until Pearson showed up in September. The Blue Jays thought Julian Merriweather could have been in that last September as well, and he really wasn't, because he was still, you know, dealing with just like the after effects of the oblique thing that he went through. So, like, it'll come down to need, obviously, and what's best for the club at the big league level. And sometimes what you really need at the big league level causes you to sacrifice a little bit of development as well. But, like, I really look at how the Rays used Patino last year. I mean, they, you know, he was up and down between MLB and AAA, like making some starts at AAA, coming up, pitching some relief outings, bulk out of the bullpen in the majors, had a little stretch in the summer where he was like taking turns in the Rays rotation, and then towards the end of the year shifted back to a bullpen role as the club was gearing up for the postseason and had a need there. So there is somewhat of a model there, but obviously Patino didn't deal with a mononucleosis infection during April that really put the kibosh on the plans. So it's honestly, I know it's an unsatisfying answer, but it's really just going to be we'll see. And as circumstances and more information comes to light, Blue Jays are going to make decisions.
No answer is unsatisfying if it's the honest answer, Arden. The other side of the Jays battery stuff, you had a great feature on Gabriel Moreno last week titled "Why Gabriel Moreno's Blue Jays Teammate Believe He's Ready for the Big Leagues." It's been an interesting couple days with the catchers, where Reese McGuire has flipped out for Zach Collins, who has, you know, fills the same, hey, lefty backup catcher spot, but the profile is a little different, and he has an option available for when the roster shrink in April. We're seeing more of Alejandro Kirk as a defensive catcher. It looks like him and Jansen could split the time when he's not DHing. The other element of that is Jose Ramirez came off the market, which was presumed to be, hey, that's the potential trade partner where maybe you got to give up one of your top prospects. Just how, I know the teammates say he's ready, but how close do you think the team thinks Moreno is, and does that have an effect on how they manage the catchers in the short term until he's ready?
What a statement that is, where it's Alejandro Kirk is the guy being relied upon defensively right now.
Yeah, I just mean he's playing back there a bunch, right? Jansen's not going to play 162.
No, 1,000%. And I think he's a better defensive option, really, than Zach Collins, which is saying something, because Alejandro Kirk is not a plus defender behind the plate. Zach Collins has just not been that guy at the big league level. I think Zach Collins actually, sort of, it's funny, I think he replaces not only McGuire on this roster, but Greg Bird as well, as that lefty power bat, work a good plate appearance off the bench, and somebody who has experience playing first base. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Zach Collins occasionally sprinkled in at first base here and there. And you know, Alejandro Kirk, like you said, being that catching option over him. Yeah, with Moreno, I mean, people that you talk to about him talk about him differently than they do about other prospects. They talk about him. You know what? It reminds me of the way guys talked about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette when they were coming up through the minors. Like, the hit tool is just pretty special. And I think he could probably hit in the majors today. You know, obviously, we just wanted to continue working on his game calling and his preparation, his routines, all of those words we've all heard before, but that is all very real stuff, and particularly when you're a catcher and you're going to be on a team like the Blue Jays that has dudes like Kevin Gausman, who, you know, throw splitters that might bounce in front of the plate half the time, and you got to try to block those things, or, you know, the Hyunjin Ryus and Yusei Kikuchis of this world are moving the ball all over the place. Jose Barrios with his, you know, wicked breaking ball. Like, it's not the easiest stuff to catch. And a bunch of veteran guys on the mound as well with really clear ideas of how they want to sequence and how they want to set hitters up first time through, second time through, third time through. So there's a lot of work that goes into that game calling and getting up to speed as a catcher. When you're transitioning to the big leagues, easily the toughest position to transition to the big leagues at. But if Gabriel Moreno goes to Buffalo and puts up the type of offensive performance and the type of underlying stuff that he produced last season in AA, if he does that at AAA this year, I mean, I think he's in the big leagues by June, July. Like, I think he's a very real option for this club, and that'll create a whole nother, like, kind of interesting dilemma behind the plate with, when you think about Danny Jansen, who will still, you assume, be catching regularly there and is the starting catcher, quote unquote, as much as there is one on this team right now, and then Alejandro Kirk as well, whose bat needs to be in this lineup for the Blue Jays to be fielding their best offense. So that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch. But, you know, if, yeah, Gabriel Moreno might just end up knocking down the door to the big leagues by summer, and that's pretty exciting.
So you just mentioned a little bit about veterans on the mound, and one person that we really haven't touched on much when we're talking about the Blue Jays this season is Ryu. You know, he was the opening day starter for 2 years in a row, and there's just not a lot of conversation about him right now. And I guess I'm curious about where you think he fits in this rotation, and are the Jays going to be cautious with him or just roll him out every fifth start and see what he's got, like the conversation around what he's going to bring to this team this year?
Yeah, definitely cautious. The Blue Jays are going to be a lot more careful managing his workload this year. They're going to steal that extra day whenever they can. We've obviously talked about it a lot, and it's just something that I think the Blue Jays have kind of learned about him over his first couple of years in a Blue Jays uniform. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays just have a better idea of how to deploy him now. And, like, it's going to be tough to do early in the season. They play 30 and 31 days, as we've said a million times. So how many roster-stripping spot starts can you get in there? Like, you know, how much roster maneuvering is it going to take to maybe get, like, a Bowden Francis up here to make a start? You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how they kind of steal him that extra rest that he needs. But, yeah, I don't think he's going to be a every 5 days kind of guy. I think he's somebody who benefits from having a little bit more rest between his outings. And, look, there's two things I always watch for early in a Hyunjin Ryu start. Where is the fastball feel up? Is it closer to 88 or closer to 91? And how is he landing his changeup? And what are the swings he's getting on his changeup? How is it moving? And is he locating it down into both sides of the plate? If he's got the fastball velo up in the low 90s and he's landing his changeup, he's liable to go seven innings and have a really nice outing. But if the velo isn't quite there and the changeup isn't coming out of his hand well, and you can, you know, you can kind of see him in his body language a little bit on the mound sometimes when he isn't really just releasing that changeup the way he needs to, that's when you might see those three inning outings. So, you know, those are the two things I'll continue to watch for from him this year. We all knew when the Blue Jays signed this contract, they're buying into a little bit of decline, right? There's always going to be you know, a little bit of a bill that comes due on these type of free agent deals. Year three now of that 4-year deal that he signed with the Blue Jays, it's going to be really interesting to see just like what direction he goes in here in year three, because there's obviously year four coming up after it as well.
Hey, buddy, you're obviously locked in right now. This was great. We appreciate it. You can now go back to playing with your clay.
Oh, five different blends.
I know. The blends. Oh, the blends. See you, Arden. Talk to you later, buddy.
Take it easy, guys.
Arden is definitely one of those people that goes on vacation and buys sand from the different beaches. Like,
yeah, exactly. They should sell the like Jay shop.
He's a sucker who buys that stuff. Like, oh my God, sand from this place. He's got all his little jars on his little shelf where he goes, this is from Cabo. And we're like, okay, cool. This is from Madrid. Cool. So yeah, now you know, all right? You were excited about the Blue Jays before. How excited are you now that you know it's a blend of five different types of dirt that they have. Sorry, not dirt, clay on the infield.
If that doesn't make you more optimistic about Bo's MVP chances because of the way it affects the shortstop play, I don't know. That insider, by the way, was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. If you want to read more about those upgrades at Rogers Center, what to expect from Blue Jays' new scoreboard, lights, and turf at sportsnet.ca. Also, make sure you check out Arden and Ben's podcast, At the Letters. They're going to have a nice, long, in-depth interview with Jose Berríos tomorrow on that podcast. So check that out. Nice way to tee up opening day after you listen to the Fan Morning Show, of course. And hey, we talked a lot about going to the Toronto Blue Jays game on Friday. But Leaf fans, we're giving away a pair of tickets to the Leafs' April 17th game against the New York Islanders. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the special code word that will be placed into the podcast. Once you've identified today's code word, text it to 590-590 for your chance to win. The winner will be selected this Friday, April 8th. Not winners last night. Two of us in the Wake and Rake. JD remains scorching, scorching hot. We'll try to get back on the right side of things. And we'll tee up Leafs and Raptors tonight. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, and Ailish coming to the plate is
Jose Bautista.
That's
ding,
right.
Ding, ding.
That's right.
What a two.
We're doing all right. I think we're doing okay. I think so. You guys didn't get Matt Stairs. You didn't get the Stone Cold music, and then the Audio Slave JPR and CB1. I thought was a layup for a good show, but we'll call it. JD got it at least, and then so Rios is the only miss so far. 9:30 might be
say,
tough,
I've
but
only...
the next one's easy too. So.
All right.
So
you guys are doing well.
I actually didn't hear the song because I disconnect my equipment sometimes during the break, and I was kind of scrambling back. I realized that the two of you were listening to the song. So I was curious to see who Blake would pick from the 2015 team when it comes to walk-up songs, because I actually think that 2015, one of the underrated aspects of that group is that the lineup of songs is heavy hitters as well. It's an incredible group. Like, so obviously Donaldson had Regulate, but I will always think of him as Phil Collins, right? Like, it's just, and I don't know if you have that, but it's just, it's so, the Donaldson not just sticking with, like, the flip to Regulate was one of the worst, and I love Regulate, but the flip of that.
No, it was so Donaldson.
Yeah it was.
And, like, and the drums, like, to come up to that drum solo is perfect.
No, and it, when it was in, like, a big spot and you were at the Rogers Center and you heard that music, it's like, I know that was Tyson's, too, so it's tough because, like, I'm sure if you're of an older vintage, then you remember Tyson in his prime, you go, oh, you shouldn't do that. It's kind of like people who watch Lawrence Taylor, and when LT was coming up, they went, oh, it's not right to be LT. We already had LT. But Donaldson doing that song was all time. But then also Tulo getting traded here and having Allo Black's I'm the Man.
Yeah.
And coming out like, I'm the man, I'm the man. Like,
Ben Revere had good walk-up music. Ben Revere came out to Kendrick at, like, peak of Kendrick popping off and like, breaking out. So
right away.
Yeah. No.
Ben Revere had All Right
no
by
misses.
Kendrick. Yeah,
no
Ben Revere,
for the
All Right by Kendrick Lamar. See, I know that, obviously, like, those teams, like, go into a million.
There's a reason I did this as the thing today. I'm so excited to hear what people are coming out to on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know.
You know what's funny? It doesn't really even stick with me with walk-up songs until we're into the year, because, again, it's a goes-to-games thing. To me, I actually get way more excited about we're going to be sitting in seats that give us a good look at the new Jumbotron, and Arden said that, and I'm excited to see what the new video screen looks like, but also that there's always these things that they do for games that by game 82, and you've been to a bunch of them, you're like rolling your eyes because other people are laughing at the stuff on the Jumbotron.
Roof is closed.
Yeah, the weather report. That was the Donaldson weather report. The roof is closed. Yeah, that was... But people laugh at it when it's their first game, and you get to be like, I'm not a casual. I'm here and know the beats of the Jumbotron for the season ticket holders or the frequents. So I'm always excited to see like what they do at the very beginning. I wonder if they'll give away more lawnmowers, you know, like, hey, will we have more lawnmower promotions? I always thought it would be funny if you won the lawnmower and then but you had to take it home like that day. Like they were like, okay, here it is. Like, go back to your seat.
Take it on the TTC.
Yeah, exactly. Here's your lawnmower. Go back to your seat and put it on your lap.
We got a couple people on the text line, obviously fired up for Blue Jays season. Andrew from Toronto says, maybe not exactly a walk-up song, but when R.A. Dickey took the field with the boys at the beginning of the game was epic with the Game of Thrones theme.
He had Game of Thrones and Star Wars. He had the, awesome. I don't know what the Star Light Wars the song Valkyries. Is called. No,
of course Blake knows that.
What's the name of the song for the Imperial March?
Imperial March? I think it might be.
So yeah, but R.A. Dickey also came out to Star Wars. He was a total geek. He liked Game of Thrones and Star Wars. Those were the two things that he came out to.
And then earlier, I think it was the 6 o'clock hour, we're talking about Who's That Guy? We got a text saying, my girlfriend literally said, who's that guy, the first time she saw Randall Grichuk. Also, yeah, what Ailish says about Bo is right.
So the thing with Grichuk, his approach at the plate and his streakiness were both like a little irritating. But I've tried to explain this to you before, JD. Mm-hmm. Grichuk suffered from what's called handsome guy heat, where a good looking guy is going to get less patience from certain people when things go wrong. If he's striking out, and you know, it's not conscious. You don't think about it. You don't be like, you know what? That handsome guy keeps swinging at bad pitches ahead in the count.
This is so funny. This is so funny you say this. Because one of my hottest takes is that I go the opposite, Blake. I think that when someone, quote unquote, is handsome and looks like a ball player, they get more rope. Because Brandon Drury, to me,
looks like a ball player and handsome are different.
But no. But sometimes they're intrinsically tied together. I think Brandon Drury only lasted in the big leagues as long as he did because of how he looked. Like, he would show up and you'd go, like, that guy fills out a uniform in a great way. Like, run him out there, Brandon Drury. And yet it was like, this guy sucks. Like, he is terrible. Watching Brandon Drury is one of the least bottom five things I've ever experienced as a sports fan. It's so bad. It was so, so bad. And especially since, like, he was a weird – the dorks decided to choose him as one of their champions of, this guy's going to be a thing. And it was just like – ugh, it was painful. It was painful. It was painful. It was painful. But that was always my theory, was handsome guy heat the opposite way, where I was like, Drury keeps getting chances because people look at him and no one wants to bring him in the office and cut this handsome guy. Like, they don't want to have to deliver the news.
I think it can go both ways, right? Like, it can go both directions. Mm-hmm. I do. Handsome guy heat is a real thing. I don't know if there are studies on it. But I'd have to ask Vic, the Ivy Leaguer among us. But
Vic also hit me with, like, he's like, that's my Garoppolo take. And Vic, I appreciate you bringing that up, but it's actually different. My Garoppolo take is that quarterbacks, like, having the equation of quarterback to handsome ratio is obvious because they're leaders, and we always look to the beautiful people. And so it's
and that you get is more one that, leash. Like, I'm pretty sure is psychologically studied. And
exactly.
Like, there is an element of that, but...
But yeah, Garoppolo is so handsome that they're like, everybody's always like, oh, everyone loves Garoppolo. He's the greatest guy. And to me, it's the elevator scene from Liar Liar, where it's like, he's the male version of that. It's like, everybody's so nice to me. It's like,
The pen is
I think we talked about that during the NFL season, and I had that same kind of thought. Mm-hmm. Like, is he good or is he just handsome?
Yeah. that should be a set, by the way. That's Ailish, you just developed the most popular segment in the history of drafts. Is he good or just handsome? Is really going to be a staple of this show moving forward. Sometimes you stumble into things like that was you. That was you discovering penicillin. You're like, whoops, this wasn't meant to be this way, but it's completely changed the history. I love that.
Okay, before we get into Wake and Rake, one last text here in text line. My girl Meredith from EG. This music reminiscing is awesome. My friend Stephanie is in charge of this, so you're shouting out the last 11 years of her hard work. Wow, good job to Stephanie.
All right.
Very cool.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Killing it.
Cool. All right. We do have some games to tee up tonight. The Raptors and Leafs are both in action. I know we haven't talked about them a ton because it's opening day in Major League Baseball and the Jays start tomorrow. But we got Leafs Stars at 8:30 on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We got Raptors 76ers at 7:30 on Sportsnet. Let's start with Raptors 76ers because it's a little newsier. because that's a potential playoff matchup. And Matisse Thybul will not play tonight because he is, quote, ineligible to play, which certainly suggests he's one of the players who does not meet the vaccination requirements to enter the country of Canada. That is a real concern if you're the 76ers, because this looks like, again, the potential 4-5 or 3-6 meeting. And if you're the 76ers, what's the thing I keep talking about all the time when there's big 76ers spreads, JD? Whenever Embiid hits the bench, they get absolutely destroyed. Yeah. And that's, I dug into the numbers more. It's actually when any starter sits. They got five guys and then a bunch of one-way specialists. I know Thybul is more of a one-way specialist himself as a top defender who doesn't contribute a lot offensively. This team does not have the depth to not have Matisse Thybul for three games in a seven-game playoff series. Raptors are minus one tonight with no Thybul. OG Anunoby's questionable. JD, how are you feeling about the 76ers, both tonight and as a potential playoff opponent after the Thybul reveal?
Well, Thybul is the number one guy you throw at Siakam. So it's a pretty big...
If you, depending on how you want the size stuff to match up, yeah.
However you want to do it. Thybul is like, I don't know where you'd rank him amongst wing defensive players in the NBA.
I mean,
but
he made all defense last year, and he played like 8 minutes the whole season.
That's what I mean. Is like this guy, so I watched a lot of him in college because he went to the University of Washington, and that's the team that I follow the most closely. And part of the reason that I watched a crappy UW team is because he is just like a special defensive player. With the way that he anticipates plays and steals and lets people do this little blow-by move where then they're like, oh, I've got an opening, and then he blocks the ever-living crap out of them and rips the ball. It's one of the cooler defensive things you can do in basketball, and he's one of my favorite players to watch defensively. Like he's
the best jump shot blocker in all of basketball. Yes. I know the Raptors have a claim with that, where Siakam, Boucher, and OG are all really good 3-point shot blockers.
Nah, but he's the best at it. Yeah,
you jump sort shot. By that, and it's always the Raptors and Thybul in the leaders. And then he, like you said, he's got that. Oh, you get by me, and then I'll do the rear view like reach over shot block. He does the like, oh, I'll let you drive this way, but you forgot the baseline's a defender, and now I can poke it out from behind you.
Yep.
He rules.
He's a huge loss for their team with the way that you would defend the Raps. And so to have him out on the perimeter and then having Joel Embiid underneath the basket, I think it really does change things for the Raptors in a series, right? Like, you got to remember, and the reason why I said Siakam is because I think you want to make life as difficult for Siakam, and you do that in two ways. One, you defend the rim with a guy like Embiid, who actually is a deterrent down there. But two, is you have a wing defender who can get underneath him and into him, but not is out-physicaled by him. And by that, I don't mean like just the strength. It's the speed and it's the quickness. And Thybul is one of those only guys in the NBA that can do those things. So, like, the idea of losing him for a series would be massive. Massive. I know not a series, but the away games.
Three games of a series,
If I'm the Raptors, all of a sudden tonight has a especially important feeling. I really wish I could get the truth serum from their room about how they feel about who they would want to play. Because if they are like you and I, Blake, then tonight is extremely important. But if I'm the Sixers...
The tough part, though, is like you don't know what's better, a win or a loss.
Yeah.
Because Boston, Milwaukee, and Philly are all within half a game of each other, and you're a game and a half up on Chicago. You're probably finishing fifth at this point. I don't like Milwaukee, Boston, and Philly. If Philly is the team you want, you unquestionably want to beat them, because then you gain on Chicago and Philly loses.
Yeah, you gain on Chicago and Philly loses. That's what I'm saying. Tonight's big for the Raptors if they view it this way. The only thing is, I also think the Sixers don't want to face the Raptors, and they're going to really want this one too. And also, Joel Embiid, I think it's become pretty clear that this MVP race is truly going to come down to the final games of the season. Like, this is an incredible MVP race. Like a truly, truly incredible one, where whoever doesn't end up winning this thing is going to feel slighted. And we know this because Joel Embiid just said, I don't know what else I can do if I don't win this award.
He's pre-slighted. Yeah,
he's pre-slighted. I think this is going to be a really tough competitive game. And so to me, it's a stay away. I have no feeling about which team is going to win this one. What I will say is I'm playing Embiid props tonight in a massive way. I know that they're going to end up being high. I haven't seen the Embiid props, but if I'm just a sports bettor and I don't want to have the feeling of not gambling against the Raptors or whatever, tonight is a classic, like Embiid blocks over, Embiid rebounds over, Embiid points over. Take them all.
So Embiid's 32.5 points, 12.5 rebounds, 1.5 blocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 3.5 assists. 12.5.
Yo, boy. So, you know what? Out of all of them, though, I feel the blocks is the safest, the rebounds, and then the points in that order.
So, yeah, this is stay away from me in part because Nick Nurse suggested that guys could be getting some rest, but we don't know who yet or what that looks like. Nobody's on the injury report other than OG. We also have the Leafs in action. The Leafs are at the Dallas Stars at 8:30. They're -135 favorites. Over-under set at 6.5. Ailish, you like anything in the Leafs-Stars game?
I have multiple comments.
Oh, yeah.
I like the Leafs.
We get a
over.
Hash brown in you and you're ready to go. Sorry to cut you off there.
I will be betting the Leafs over forever because they have hit it multiple times. They have got like 30 something goals in 5 games. So like that will be my wake and rake pick. I need a win. I'm having a struggle bus. That's it. Leafs over. Second
well,
point.
You and I beat Cabby yesterday in SN Bets.
So I was about to say, second point is that we had a good debut on the Sportsnet Bets competition between Cabby yesterday. JD and I went in and we went a puck line for the Flames over the Ducks and they won 4-2. So we did a great job and we get some credit for that, even though both of our wake and rake picks didn't hit me and Blake. So thanks for JD for holding us up. Third point, Tyler Seguin playing the Toronto team. I feel good about him being on the scoreboard tonight. I think that he always plays up for the Leafs. You know, he's a local guy. He had a good night last night with the Stars. I think he got a point or he scored. So he's someone to seriously consider just sprinkling a little bit on. But yes, the Maple Leafs, we got Austin Matthews chasing his goal scoring lead. I feel really good about them tonight. Hammering the over.
To be clear, it's over 3.5, just Leafs total, not the total for the game?
No, total for the game.
Oh, okay. I like the Leafs total.
Yeah, I thought you,
like, what is, sorry, the, what is the Leafs
the
total?
Leafs,
I'm trying to
the
look
Leafs
at
individual total as a team is at 3.5, and you get -115.
Okay. I didn't see that.
So, and the total for the game
like
is 6.5
well.
At -120. So you actually get a little better juice on Leafs over 3.5 than
is
over
Campbell,
six and a half
I assume
total.
Campbell's playing.
We're at, that's the anticipation. I don't think it's been confirmed.
I have one other but hockey note.
It's Campbell against Jake Oettinger.
Yes. One other hockey note.
Yeah, what's up?
Hari Sitari is making his Coyotes debut tonight. You bet he is. He's playing for the Arizona Coyotes tonight. Hari Sitari, tune in to see our Leafs legend that never made it here. But, yeah, against the Canucks could be a interesting debut for him. I don't know what to bet on that, but just – yeah. You get to watch Hari Sitari NHL
well,
debut.
If you're a Leafs, don't. Yeah, if don't you're a Leafs masochist, you bet on Hari. Well, I mean, or a pessimist, I guess, you bet on Hari Sitari to have a really good game, right? Mm-hmm. You take the Coyotes and the under in that one, or something like that. Ailish, before we pivot off to mine and JD's best picks, over 6.5 or Leafs over 3.5? Which one do
Let's
you want to lock
Leafs
in?
Over 3.5.
Okay. All right, slightly better value on that one as well.
And they're spicy good right now, so.
I got to admit something to you both, which is that last night, with it being a down night and with everything that's happening in terms of Thursday television, Friday television, or Friday going to the baseball game, Saturday television, Sunday television. Like, it's a intense sports next 4 days. And so, I had load management yesterday in terms of I'm not going to watch TV. I didn't watch any TV. I actually forget because I didn't even gamble because I didn't gamble last night in trying to make myself assured that I would not pay attention to sports. What happened in the wake and rake yesterday? You two lost and I won again?
Yes. And also, this is how weird of a night it was. I opened up the sheet this morning and I had us both as Celtics -6.5. I forgot. I had to go back and listen
you
to what
you got the
picked.
Vegas Golden Knights, the late game.
I know.
That everybody gets mad
but
at for picking.
I added it wrong in the spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And luckily, the wake and rake was already busted by then. So Vegas loses, the Lightning lose. Celtics cover in a absolute snoozer against the Bulls.
So
the Bulls, by the way, have the second worst record in the entire NBA against good teams now. Only the Rockets have been worse than the Bulls against good teams.
That's a good stat to know.
The Bulls are sixth in the East, like the absolute monster fade for whoever the Bulls get in the playoffs.
Okay, so I am kind of curious though right now is like this is obviously a team event. We do this as a team and do the parlay picking, but I think I've only now got one loss in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I've picked you correctly
are,
all
you're
week.
You're 9-1 over your last 10.
Yeah. So, God, I hate that one because of the streak of what it would be or what it could be. Because
I know, and it was a hockey over, and you were so hot on hockey overs.
Yeah, and I had to stick with the hockey over, and so I missed that one. But, yeah, so I'm glad that I'm feeling this right now because, again, gambling is legal. And so we can actually profit off these now.
You're 3-0 in the on bets where actually we've actually played. The rest were just funny money. We were betting like pogs
funny
and
money.
Stuff.
I'm actually taking credit because had you been following us on Instagram, then you would know that we gave out that Flames pick yesterday too as a bonus in our Instagram stories. This is a strange night for me because the NBA is now it's a busy night, but I really hate, I look at the Celtics and I go, why are the Celtics getting 6.5? I guess they played last night, but it was a snoozer. Are they resting guys? Like, no, they're not going to be resting guys against the Bucks. So I kind of like the Celtics. There's way too many huge lines that are just, like, they're a little too big, like Hornets minus 13, Pelicans minus 17. I guess the one for me that I'm looking at and saying, well, how does this not cover, is late in that, like, the Warriors aren't going to beat the brakes off of the Lakers, but then it's still no Steph, whatever. What's the injury report latest with Memphis?
Memphis has no Ja Morant, and Dylan Brooks is questionable. On the Denver side, they're the usual. Jeff Green is questionable, is the only addition.
Uh-huh. Because Steven Adams has been banged up lately.
And Jaren Jackson are both playing. They're both expected to. The Jaren-Jokic matchup is a ton of fun. The red flag factor here for me, if you're leaning Memphis, is Denver needs this game. Memphis is locked in. Memphis can't go anywhere in the standings. They can't even change their draft position at this point. Denver needs it. Denver can clinch tonight.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys something that you're not going to like. You're really not going to like it. You're really, really going to hate it.
Okay.
Can I apologize in advance?
Sure.
My favorite bet of the night is that Flames Sharks over, but the game starts at 10:30, and
it's a Raptors Leafs double dip with MLB opening night. If you don't think I'm going to be burning the midnight oil.
But I also kind of like Kraken and Blackhawks over 6, which is like I never like the pushes where you're like. But I just think like both those teams have such horrific goaltending that who even cares? Like they're just both kind of crappy teams. You could end up with one. But so I'm gonna go with the Flames Sharks over. It's 6. I think that you can tease it down to 5.5 and have it still be well within the thing. It's at 6 right now. I just hate pushes, like I really do, but even still, the number right now is 6. It's just a flat 6. 6 is everywhere, so I hate doing it, but I'm going to take it in a game where I normally never want the push, but I'm going to take a game where there is a push. The late one, Sharks Flames over. I'm assuming no Markstrom tonight. Played yesterday. That's how we won our Ducks pick. Just a sloppy game. Two teams that have actually been playing each other kind of low-scoring games recently, but I don't anticipate this one. I think this is going to be a barn burner game. So give me the over in this one.
I will give you the over in that one. If you guys think I'm not doing a baseball one on MLB opening day, you're crazy. I'm going to do the opposite of the late game pick. I'm actually going with the 220 game today. Going to Brewers-Cubs. We're going to go with the Corbin Burns over 6.5 strikeouts. He had a 35.6% strikeout rate last year, averaged 6 innings per start, wasn't managed tightly at the start of last season, got as far as 6 innings in the spring training, so there's no workload concerns. He averaged 8.4 strikeouts over 6 innings last year, and the Cubs struck out more than any other team in baseball. So Corbin Burns over 6.5 strikeouts, Toronto Maple Leafs over 3.5 goals, Calgary Flames, San Jose Sharks over 6 goals total. It's an over-heavy wake and rake for April 7th. Lock it in. Let's up.
Like, I love this. You know what's funny? I didn't even think to look at baseball because I didn't even think about it yet. Now I got to get in my rhythm.
Surprised
we
didn't have any Masters opening day bets in there.
The hard part is that this is like it's 8:55 right now, and like say you wanted to do a Tiger one or something like that. Like he tees off in.
They should
hours.
Be listening live.
I know. It's tough. I feel bad about the 221. But what are you going to do? All right. That's Wake and Rake for today.